Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
If you've been paying attention to the aftermath of the national championship game, you know that as soon as that game ended, somebody was doling out cash. Serious, serious cash. Like stacks and stacks of cash. I mean, after all, that was a big, big moment. And people were happy, so it's in those moments that the money starts to flow. And for a moment, nobody noticed. But now, all of a sudden, it is a story. So why don't we get into this? I'm going to read from news reports because I want to make sure that I get this right, because the money is huge. I mean, I'm talking about more than grab a burger and a soda money, more than per diem money, more than normal walk around money. And at the same time that somebody was getting richer, somebody else was missing out on that big time dough. As soon as the clock hit triple zero, Ed Orgeron collected $500,000. As soon as the score went official, Coach O, who said in the aftermath he was looking to have another ham sando, was $500,000 richer because of that bonus. Meanwhile, Dabo Swinney missed out on an extra $250,000, which kind of sucks for him. But don't cry for Dabo, because according to USA Today, he already collected $50,000 for getting to the AFC title game, $150,000 for winning it, $200,000 for playing in the CFP semifinals, and $200,000 large for winning that. Man, that is a ton of cash being handed out after these playoff games. A ton of cash. So I want to start right there. Oh, I'm sorry. Did you want to talk about Odell Beckham Jr. handing out cash to players? Because apparently that happened also. Allegedly. Probably. Who the hell cares, Italy? There was a video of Beckham allegedly handing out cash to players after that game during the celebration. On Tuesday, LSU told the Baton Rouge Advocate the money being handed out on the field was not real. What? Like, in addition to being one of the most dominant receivers in the game, my man's also running a money counterfeiting ring. He's just down there in his basement, cranking out. Thank you. Cranking out fake hundies by the thousands. And then before heading to the national championship game on Monday night, he jammed his pockets full of all the fake dough. Is that what you're saying? Sure he didn't. Then the school released a statement saying, quote, "We are aware of the situation regarding Odell Beckham Jr. interacting with LSU student athletes and others unaffiliated with the team following the championship game Monday night. Initial information suggested that the bills that were exchanged were novelty bills. Information and footage reviewed since shows apparent cash may have also been given to LSU student athletes." It goes on, quote, "Initial information suggested bills that were exchanged were novelty bills," end quote. Oh, okay. So he's not running a counterfeiting ring out of his basement. He's just rolling up to a game with, quote, "novelty bills." You know, kind of like my man stopped off at Chuck E. Cheese on the way in. Got a bunch of those game tokens, and he's handing those things out. Yay! Yo, yo, yo. Yo, Joe Burrow, congrats. Congrats, brother. Great win. Go play some skee ball on me. Go ride up and down on that seat and get your picture taken. That black and white picture with that gigantic rat. Or he's handing out. Thank you again, Alvin. Or he's handing out, like, $1 billion bills with photos of Elvis and the Joker on them. Yeah, that makes total and complete sense. Nothing to see here. Just move on. Of course, that doesn't make sense. And of course, Joe Burrow told Pardon My Take, quote, "I'm not a student athlete anymore, so I can say, yeah," end quote. Like, yeah, it was real money. Yeah. Uh-oh! Joe admitted it. He flat out admitted it. Let's start the investigation right now and look into how many wins should be taken away from LSU for the year. And of course the money was real. Of course it was. Did you see the video of Odell claiming he was going to sell Justin Jefferson's cleats?
I'm selling these cleats. $200,000.
Did that sound like a guy who was handing out, quote, novelty bills? Hell nah. I'm going to be honest. I'm really not sure what's more idiotic in this case. People trying to claim that the money was fake, or people freaking out that the money was real. I think I'll go with the latter, because folks are losing their collective bleep, acting like what we have here is some real scandal. You know, like, what about the sanctity of amateur athletics? What kind of an example does this set? Who will think of the children? Is the national championship tainted? Should they be stripped? Should there be an asterisk on this win? Hey, listen, I'm not here to hate. This, of course, is a hate-free zone. But I will be real, and I will own this, and I will be transparent. I do hate two things. I hate two things in my life. One, that teenager behind the counter at Nectar who hung me out and disrespected me and would not let me buy her celery water. Hate that. And number two, I hate that people are getting worked up about this story. And while I haven't watched, I'm guessing there are people on television today or on social yelling about this and getting all worked up about it because Odell violated the rules. And it doesn't matter if it was his school or that he was hyped or if he was liquored. Rules are rules. You cannot break them, especially those rules. Because according to this same crowd, some things in this world are sacred. And making sure athletes, college athletes, do not get any money is one of those sacred things. Man, I've got no problem. I have no problem with Odell handing out cash on the field and in the locker room after the game. Why not? I mean, what's the problem with that? Are you telling me that you genuinely believe that Beckham is the only alum or booster doing the old $100 handshake in the minutes, hours, days, and weeks that follow that game? I mean, you don't really think that, do you? And don't tell me it's an outrage because they're already compensated in the form of an education. Let's be real. And I say this with complete respect because I have complete and total respect for Joe Burrow and his game. He just had one of the most ridiculous seasons that a quarterback's ever had in college football. But Joe also mentioned in the past that all of his classes were online. So how does that work with your idea of a scholar athlete? The school just made a crap ton of money for being in that game. Coach O and some of his assistants are collecting nice bonuses for winning that game. But some of you are going to freak out because the players might see a few $100 or a few thousand. I'm telling you, there is money flowing everywhere as a result of that game, and you're bothered that some of it might be making its way down to the people who actually, I don't know, did the work, performed, played in the game, earned it, you know, the players. If that's your angle, if that's what you're worried about, if that's what you're freaking out about, maybe you do some thinking on that. Because again, that says more about you than it does about Beckham or Burrow or anybody else. In other words, nothing to be pissed about. In fact, nothing to even see. Nothing at all. Keep moving.
Go Tigers.
Go Tigers. Go Tigers.
Go Tigers.
Wesley Woodyard is my guest. Wesley, good to have you. How are you?
Good, Jim. How you doing today? What's
good.
Up with the jungle?
Oh, man, it's good to hear you. Great to have you back. All right, so we're a couple of days out from the AFC Championship game, Wesley. As always, you are locked in on the task at hand, but how do you approach this particular week? Is it the same as any other week, or do you buckle down even more?
You got to take the same approach as is if it's just like a regular season game, but know that the stakes are a lot higher and that every big play is going to be amplified and every mistake is going to be amplified as well. So, you know, for me, being in the situation, being in the playoffs before, you just take it one game at a time and treat it like a normal week. But just know that, hey, there's no room for error and the margin for error is very slim out there.
Hey, clones, the question of the day. What do we want when we're craving protein or we need more energy? I can tell you what we don't want. We don't want another bar or another sugary snack or another energy drink. No, instead we want beef. Pure and simple. So where's the beef? It's in a package of Old Trapper beef jerky. Old Trapper is not your old man's jerky. It's not shriveled. It's not dry. It's not tasteless. Old Trapper beef jerky is made from lean strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a real wood fire. So it's tender and tasty. It's not tough. What makes it so good? I'm going to say it's the company behind it. Old Trapper is a 50-year-old family business known for their relentless commitment to quality. And Old Trapper is packed with protein. It comes in four amazing flavors to satisfy all your cravings. It's quality smoked meat at its finest, and it goes wherever you go. Look for Old Trapper in the Clearview bag. That way you can see the quality you're purchasing. Look for it in major retail stores near you. If you don't see it, be sure to ask for it by name, because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? Wesley Woodyard is my guest. Now, if we were to go back to earlier this season, the team was 2-4. Things were looking pretty grim. A lot of teams that fall to 2-4 keep right on sliding. They do not turn it around and go to the AFC Championship game. So what's it say about this team that you guys were able to do just that?
You know, we all challenged ourselves from, you know, inside the locker room to the coaches. You know, after that Broncos game, we were 2-4. And, you know, I remember sitting and asking, you know, coach and our GM that could we have a team meeting to get together as a squad and pull together and see where we're making mistakes, because we knew we were a great team and we just weren't going out there playing like it. So, you know, coach brought us in. We watched that film together as a team. You know, our leaders stepped up even more. And, you know, the rest is history, man. I really think that, you know, we continue to believe in each other and buying into this system every week and try to get better and better every week. That's the trick right there. Trying to come into the playoffs, you don't want to come into playoffs thinking you've arrived. You want to continue to get better week in and week out, and I think that's a challenge that we've accepted.
Wesley Woodyard is my guest. Not only that, but you get into the postseason, it's not like you've cruised right through. You end the season by beating Houston in their house, then you beat New England in theirs, and you follow that up by beating Baltimore in theirs. How would you describe the feeling then of the past 3 weeks?
Man, it's been crazy. You know, these past few weeks, man, the playoff came early, a week early for us at the end of the regular season with, you know, having a win on the road. So we kind of got that road mentality started with the last week of the season in Houston, you know, and that just trickled and carried over week by week. We knew the challenges that New England brought, and we definitely knew the challenges that Baltimore had at the table. So, you know, we just take it week by week, and like I said, man, just trying to get better, trying to demand more from our players, and just the approach has to be just slightly different as far as being locked in a little bit more.
Wesley Woodyard joining us again. Now, as long as we're talking about feelings, as a linebacker and a member of that defense and a leader, what kind of thoughts and feelings do you have when Derrick Henry is absolutely trucking dudes? And how much does the defense feed off that?
Man, we feed off that a lot. You know, whenever he runs through somebody's face or stiff arm on the opponent through in their back or turn a defender into a lead blocker, you know, man, we feed off of that. We see that. We get amped up, and as a defense, you're like, hey, let's get the ball back so we can watch our offense do work again. And, you know, to see D-Hen, you know, just I've been able to watch his progression as a player, as a leader over the last few years being on the team with him. And, man, he's just making great strides. And I really think he's becoming a true professional and a guy that's going to be causing havoc and pain in this league for Lord knows however long he wants to play.
Titans and Chiefs coming up this weekend. And then, Wesley, Kevin Byard has talked about how there's a different level of brotherhood with this group, a different level of, quote, unity with the team. Quote, we truly believe we can win every game that we're playing in, end quote. You've been in a lot of locker rooms. How would you describe the bonds in this locker room and the confidence that is there because of it?
You know, I think it's crazy, man. It started back, you know, even in OTAs and in training camp, guys weren't just rushing out of the locker rooms. Guys were actually trying to, you know, stick around and be brothers. I'm taking people out to eat, you know, spending time, my family's with somebody else's family. So it's those little small things that sometimes get overlooked because of the wins and the losses. But like KB said, man, we've been close in this locker room in the past, and I think that really carried over to this year. All the camaraderie we had within the past few years, that carried over to this year, and now it's just we know what's at stake, and And you don't want to let your brothers down. And I think that's something else that's going to be a key factor for our game, man. We go out there, we play hard for one another, and it shows out there on the football field.
Now, you and I have talked leadership so many times in the past. You recently told this story to the team website about how when you first arrived with the Denver Broncos in training camp, you were working on the, quote, little guy field. That's the field where a number of guys who probably are not going to make the team are working out. A vet was there as well. You asked him a question, and he intentionally told you the wrong thing to do. What do you remember about that, and then how much did that shape you as a leader going forward?
You know what? I tell you what, it was some things that happened from that moment. That guy ended up being cut, released. I beat him out. But most importantly, it taught me two things. It taught me that, you know, if I'm going to be a leader in this football league in the future, this was me thinking, like, you know, I have to know exactly what I'm doing and what everybody else is around me doing. So that kind of transformed my whole mindset to just like, hey, I have to be a true professional. I have to know what everybody's doing on the defense if I'm going to be a middle linebacker. And, you know, and it also taught me that, hey, there's going to become a young guy one day that's going to be looking up to you, that's going to want to ask you for answers, and you have two choices. Either you can dick him around and tell him some BS, or you can tell him the truth and show him the right way. And for me, that's my choice. That's the choice I want to go. I want to show guys the right things to do, teach them and tell them everything that my great veterans taught me when I was in Denver. And that's what it's all about, man. If you're not changing this game for a positive, then you're a negative.
I love that. Wesley Woodyard joining us. If you're not changing this game for a positive, then you are a negative. Now, people outside the team are starting to give more and more respect to Mike Vrabel as a head coach. What has he been like to play for over the course of this year?
Oh, man, it's been exciting, you know, from last year to this year. You know, his consistency has been strong. You know, the messages, that's where sometimes, you know, football coaches, you know, drop the ball. The message isn't the same throughout the whole coaching staff or throughout the organization, but he's been able to do that. You know, you don't have to come to work guessing or wondering how Coach Vrabel is going to act or how he's going to address everything. He's the same every week, and to me, that's all you can ask for as a player. You know, you don't want a wishy-washy coach. You want a coach that goes in there and knows what they're talking about, cares about his guys, and wants to win.
Not only that, but a coach, right, who is accountable. For instance,
yeah,
this is a guy who's owned up to things when they haven't gone quite the right way. I mean, you know other coaches who might be tempted to say, hey, I did my job, I did everything right, but the players screwed it up. How powerful is it then when the head coach says, that's on me, and doesn't point the finger?
Man, that's another key point to the reason why we've turned our season around. You know, when we had that 2-4 meeting, it wasn't just for the players. And Vrabel stood up there and he was like, hey, this isn't just on the players. This is on everybody who's in this room and who's in this building. We got to get it corrected. We got to fix it. And he's not afraid to say, hey, you know, I messed up on this. Or you know, even Coach Pease, he'll be like, hey, you know, it's funny, I don't normally make a bad call, but if I make a bad call, I'm going to accept my mistakes. And he's accepted some mistakes from time to time. And I think as a man, you know, other men look up to you as being a head coach or a defensive coordinator. They want to see how you're going to react in those tough times and those trying times. And when you show true face and stand up for what's right and what's wrong, guys are going to respect that and gravitate to you more.
Wesley Woodyard, my guest. All right, then, finally, as a defense, you've just beaten Tom Brady and Lamar Jackson, and now you've got to go up against Patrick Mahomes. What is the number one thing you need to do to slow him down, limit him, and that offense?
Well, I tell you what, man. I will say we can't let him escape the pocket like he did last week versus the Texans, and that's gonna be key, man. Trying to keep him contained, and you know that's the big thing. Not let him have two different ways. Some quarterbacks you want them to get out of the pocket, but Mahomes, man, he can eat you alive if you just let him run around back there. So that's something that we got to do, man. Contain him and not let him run free.
All right, finally, you had 7 tackles in that win over Kansas City back in November. How much are you able to take away from that game and then apply to this one?
Oh, you know, it's funny that you say that because the regular season games and the playoff games sometimes don't match up. So, you know, I think for me it's just looking at those plays that they hit us, you know, whether that's a scheme play, whether that's a play we messed up, and just trying to figure out, hey, how can I not do that again to allow them to have success? Because we left some plays out there, myself included, left some plays the last time we played them, and, you know, that game could have went either way with those mistakes. But this week, man, like I said, the margin for error is very slim, and we got to be locked in and focused and ready to go.
He is a team captain now every single season since high school, a four-time Walter Payton Man of the Year nominee. Played his college ball at Kentucky. Good friend of the program. Tennessee at Kansas City Sunday on CBS. Wesley, appreciate you very, very much. Great to have you back. Good luck on Sunday.
Tighten up, man. Great to be on the Jungle.
Let's talk Conor McGregor. It's almost impossible to pick an actual starting point with Conor McGregor when you consider his amazing rocket ship ride to international superstardom that he subsequently chased with three straight years of pretty much nothing but bad headlines and bad results. And for as terrible as things went the last time he was in the octagon, they have gone even worse outside the cage ever since then. We're talking arrests, lawsuits, cell phone smashings, lackluster whiskey reviews, and a left hand to the face of an old man who didn't want to pour of the proper at a pub in Ireland. All of that. But now 15 months away from the UFC, Conor is back. And I haven't spoken to him, but I've been watching him and listening to him. He looks great. He sounds great. He says he feels great. And he is the heavy favorite heading into that showdown against Donald Cowboy Cerrone in Vegas. Now, if you were expecting a grip of the standard and legendary trash talk that this guy runs at his pre-fight pressers, then you're not going to be happy. You're going to be let down. Because not only was Conor 15 minutes early to the Pearl Theater yesterday, he was on his best behavior and killing Cowboy with kindness.
That's one hell of a coat, Donald. My God. I got to give credit where credit is due. You know what I mean? I don't know whether you've outdone me. I've got lions on the inside of my baby here. You know what I mean? But that's a damn good coat, brother. What is it now? Is it crocodile or?
Yeah, it's a python.
Python. Good man.
Amazing. Like, even when the guy's being nice, and I don't know if he's being sincere or not, he makes me laugh. It's a damn good coat, brother. What is that, crocodile? No, it's python.
That's a coat, Donald. My God. I got to give credit where credit is due. You know what I mean? I don't know whether you've outdone me. I've got lions on the inside of my baby here. You know what I mean? But that's a damn good coat, brother. What is it now? Is it crocodile or?
Yeah, it's a python.
Python. Good man.
It's an amazing exchange. I mean, you're probably like, Rome, it's not that amazing. And I'm here to tell you, that's amazing. He said, quote, "I've got lions inside my baby here." And he opened it up to show it. I don't know if you've outdone me. I've got lions inside my baby here.
You know what I mean? I don't know whether you've outdone me. I've got lions on the inside of my baby here. You know what I mean? But that's a damn good coat, brother.
Like, Conor, man, when he's not doing really reprehensible stuff, he's hard not to love, for me personally. When he's not doing reprehensible stuff, like committing crimes and such. He's so funny, though. And, like, that's the rare compliment of an opponent before a fight from Conor. You don't get that. And not only a compliment, but a dude who's head to toe in David August complimenting another man's threads? And that's a far cry from when he dressed down Mayweather for showing up like a, quote, 40-year-old schoolboy with a backpack who can't read. Remember that? Like the entire 30-minute session, which he showed up early for, was like this tennis match of respect. Both guys volleying positive things and compliments back and forth, building each other up. Like Cowboy, he said that nobody brings the eyeballs and the money like Conor, and calling him his toughest test yet. Conor straight up being asked for a prediction and then using it as an opportunity to shine up Cerrone.
I've had my back and forth with Donald throughout the years. You know, we've had a good back and forth, myself and Donald. And as time has gone on, you know, he's become a family man. Obviously, you've seen him compete so many times. It's hard not to respect Donald right now at this stage. And he has my respect. And although there will be blood spilled on January 18th, it will not be bad blood.
It's hard not to respect Donald. Conor, I thought you respect absolutely nobody.
Absolutely nobody. The double champ does what the f*** he wants.
If it all seems weird for Conor, it's because it kind of is. Now, it doesn't mean it's bad. It doesn't mean it's wrong. But it is different, for sure. It is the same guy who threw unopened bottles at Nate Diaz at their presser years back. The same guy who brought a pint of whiskey to a sit-down with Habib. and started pulling from it while verbally annihilating this dude.
I don't drink.
Why don't you drink?
I don't drink.
Why don't you drink?
I never drink.
I'll tell you some booze at parties.
I never drink.
You're mad backwards. You're dead drink. When I get my hands on you, do you hear me?
I never
you're
drink.
Dead.
I never drink this
old drink.
Shit.
Me and you me know, like me and the artist Boston Animal Dana with the OG of the fight game. He'll sup this bad boy.
Yeah, I didn't see this guy yesterday.
It's gonna be a long night.
Yes!
He knows
this. Oh, Lord, save me that.
He knows this. He knows this.
Connor, question for you. Fill in the blank. Connor McGregor is going to blank Khabib when you guys meet each other.
Stomp on his head as he's unconscious.
Incredible. Connor McGregor is going to do blank to Khabib. Stomp on his head while he's unconscious.
Stomp on his head as he's unconscious.
All right, so all that hype, all that smack, obviously none of that happened when they fought. But it did sell the hell out of the fight. Because nobody works a mic like that guy. Which is why it was kind of strange to hear him up there hyping up and being nice to Cowboy. Especially when most people think he's going to run right through the Cowboy. But here's the thing. It's pretty tough to go 3 entire years without getting your hand raised. And then come into any room and start telling a guy you're going to kill him. Or bounce his head off the canvas. Or stomp on his head while he's unconscious. Or snatch his soul. It's even tougher to do that when you got choked the hell out the last time you ran that noise. So, Connor is switching up. Is he humbled? Has he changed? Is he a different guy? I don't really know. I don't really care. Because the fact of the matter is, nothing he said or did yesterday really matters. The only thing that matters is what's going to happen Saturday night in Vegas. Because Connor's not just fighting for a paycheck. Although, according to him, it's a huge paycheck. This guy's fighting for more this time. He's fighting for his career. He's got to win this weekend. It becomes pretty hard to get people to keep showing up and shelling out for you if you cannot win. Now, granted, he's a different guy and a different personality, but so was Ronda, Chuck, Tito, BJ, Rampage, Pettis, Aldo, Brock. And when it goes fast. And by the look of it and by the sound of it, Connor can still be Connor. By all reports, he's in the best shape of his life. Watching the Embedded series, to me, he looks great. But by his own admission, he cut out alcohol during his camp. He was killing Khabib for not drinking. But then he cut it out himself, at least for camp. And as he said yesterday, he wants to get the strap again. And then fight Masvidal for the BMF title. And then go get some gold in whatever division makes the most sense. Programming note, Masvidal is our podcast next week. We'll get his reaction to this fight. But again, none of that's going to happen if Connor does not get by Cowboy. He should, but he cannot for a second get caught looking ahead because Cowboy's not some can right off the couch. Nobody has won more fights than this guy in UFC history. And even though he's in line for his biggest paycheck ever, you know what he wants to do most of all? Shock the world, shut the haters up, and put Connor out. And he can. Cowboy can if he gets the fight to the canvas or if he survives the blitz that Connor is going to throw at him right from the glove tap in round one. The longer the fight goes, the better it is for Cowboy, especially if he can mix in some kicks and wear down Connor and hurt him. Hurt him low. Connor's best weapon is that stick of dynamite in his left hand. Everybody knows he's going to come out throwing that. I know they both promised a 5-round fight yesterday, but Connor does not want that. No chance. Dude is going to be looking to kill and kill quickly because if he does get back on the left side of that column, then he's in line to get some enormous fights with enormous paydays, and he's right back to being him. So everything is on the line for him on Saturday. Big time night. What do you think? You heard him? You saw him? Are you buying it? Has he changed?
Python, good man.
You know, I'm not saying this for effect. I mean this sincerely. Almost everybody I know now has trouble sleeping. Do you fit into that? Are racing thoughts overtaking your night of sleep? Are you tired of not being able to sleep? Do you have trouble falling asleep or staying asleep? If so, it's time for you to try Ebb. If you've tried everything from pills to pillows with little success, it is time for you to try Ebb. Ebb comfortably cools your forehead, and it helps to quiet the racing mind, and it promotes the natural onset of sleep. Ebb is the first and only wearable drug-free solution that targets the root cause of sleeplessness, the racing thoughts. Ebb applies precise and continuous cooling to the forehead, which calms your mind. Plus, it's clinically validated, and 4 out of 5 users report falling asleep faster and improving overall sleep quality. Ebb Sleep is a wearable solution that fits over the forehead and gently and precisely cools the forehead to reduce those racing thoughts, and it allows people who are suffering from sleeplessness to drift more comfortably into a deeper, more restorative sleep. And Ebb Sleep is designed to work with your natural sleep-wake rhythms to allow you to get into that deep sleep more quickly. This is a real issue. Many people I know have trouble sleeping. You want to have the energy to do the things that you love again, and you need to get the sleep in order to do them. Ebb's natural solution has no morning side effects and allows you to get back to your peak performance. And right now, you can try Ebb, risk-free, for 60 nights to confirm that it is the solution you have been looking for. Go to tryebb.com/Rome. That's tryebb.com/Rome. Again, tryebb.com/Rome. Order today and get the sleep you need and deserve. Dana White. Dana, good to have you back. How are you?
I'm good, buddy. How are you?
Good, good, Dana. So we're 48 hours out, McGregor versus Cowboy. First off, how is your fight week going, and how much are you looking forward to this card?
It's been good. It's been smooth. Conor McGregor has been an absolute pro to deal with this week. He's been showing up on time for everything. The press conference between him and Cowboy yesterday was very cordial between those two, and very interesting week.
Danny, you hit on two key things that I wanted to ask you about. Number one, Conor and Cowboy did have their face off yesterday at the presser, but they were all smiles after it. They shook hands. There was no trash talk between the two of them. What do you make of that scene, and what's your sense as to the vibe between the two fighters? For instance, do they genuinely like each other, or is Conor playing his normal mind games?
Who knows with Conor, but I think one of the things that you could tell with Conor at the press conference yesterday is he's actually happy to be here. He's happy to be back. I think with the Khabib press conference and some of the fights, you kind of felt the wheels coming off the bus a little bit. And, you know, it's good to see Conor back and happy to be here.
It's one thing, Dana, for the wheels to come off the bus, another for him to try to run a dolly through the bus, so that's a good thing. Hey, Dana, correct me if I'm wrong, but did you just say, and I thought that I saw this, Conor pretty much was on time for that press conference. What do you make of that?
He was on time for everything that he's done this week. Everything that he was supposed to be at, he's been on time. He's been a pleasure to work with my staff. Everything's been perfect, man.
All right, so you've also made the point that tickets have been so in demand that you do not have enough for the fighters who are interested, and you've even had to turn down numerous celebrities. What is the buzz among the fighters for this fight? For instance, are they wanting to see what Conor has, or are they wanting to show up so they can see Cowboy beat him up?
You know, I think there's a little bit of both, but there's something special about being live at a Conor McGregor fight. There's a buzz and an energy that you don't get at different fights. And you know, that's why this thing isn't even a title fight for the main event. $10.6 million gate. We've been opening up kills, you know, production kills, and putting tickets back on sale all week. So it's been phenomenal.
Dana White, UFC president, joining us. You've got UFC 246, McGregor and Cowboy, Saturday night live from Las Vegas. So, obviously, Dana, Conor has not had a fight since UFC 205. That was a long time ago. Lots of reports about how he feels great. I think that he looks great from what I've seen. Do you have any idea what to expect from him, though, when he steps into the cage?
Yeah, supposedly he's in great shape right now. Our UFC doctor said it's the best shape he's ever seen him in. And I don't know what to expect. You know, I'm a big believer in ring rust, and he's been off for a while. And he's only fought at 170 pounds twice. He won one and he lost one. He's a 145-pound champion. Many people thought he couldn't do it at 155. He did, made it look easy when he won the title. But 170 is a completely different animal.
It certainly
Cowboy
is.
Cerrone has fought all the best in the world, has fought at 170 for a long time. He can win so many different ways, punch, elbow, knees. He's got more head kick knockouts than anyone else in UFC history. And if it goes to the ground, Cowboy Cerrone is nasty on the ground. Vegas has him at a 3.5-1 dog. It's ridiculous.
I was going to say, Dana, with all the focus on Conor, because it is a Conor week, are people underestimating and sleeping on the Cowboy?
Yes. I mean, they totally are. I've never seen such disrespect for a guy that has done so much and been around for so long and has broken just about every record UFC has.
Dana White joining us. The other thing, Dana, about the Cowboy, he said, quote, everyone always says, Cowboy, can you fight the big fight? Can you ever make it on the big fight? Well, mother bleeper, here's the biggest one. Let's see. End quote. What do you make of that rap as it relates to the Cowboy, and how badly do you think he wants to change that?
Yeah, and I think he gets that rap because he's been around for so long. He's beat so many of the best in the world, but he's never won a world title. So every time he gets to that level, right now he's the number 5 ranked guy in the world. McGregor is number 4 in the world. You know, a win over Conor McGregor this weekend will be massive for Donald Cerrone and put him in title contention.
All right, so what about Conor? If Conor wins that fight, how big is that for him and where does that leave him?
Huge. He gets what he's been waiting for. He gets what he's been asking for. He has been chomping at the bit for the Khabib rematch. And I think it's no big secret. If he wins this weekend, he will get that shot at the title, and it will be the biggest pay-per-view ever in UFC history.
But so in terms of pay-per-view, he told ESPN that he thinks that he might make $80 million off this fight. 80, Dana. How accurate does that number sound to you?
Yeah, listen, he's making a lot of money, and he's a partner in the upside. And if you look at all the ancillary things that happen off a massive fight like this, his whiskey, I'm sure he sells more whiskey when he's fighting. He's got massive sponsorship deals with sponsors. He has his own clothing line, August McGregor, and the list goes on and on. So, when Khabib beat Conor McGregor in that last fight, you know, when he got back to Russia, stuff that was given to him, then he did that whole Middle Eastern Muslim tour where every sheikh down there was handing him money. I mean, the money that comes off a big win like this, it's massive.
Danny, go back to his August McGregor clothing line. You and I are both David August guys. How come we don't have a clothing line?
Yeah, right. I don't know. Because we're not Conor McGregor, I guess.
I was going to say, I know why, because I don't have that left hand. I do not have that left hand. Listen, Dana, before you go, you and I have discussed this over the last few years. Conor has been through so much outside of the cage since that last win, a lot of it self-inflicted. In the Embedded series, it seems like he's in a really good place. He's talked about how experience is the best teacher. If you had to guess, where do you think he is mentally and emotionally? In other words, does he seem like a different guy to you, or is he telling us what we want to hear?
Well, here's the thing. You know, Jim, you've been in the game for a long time, and this is the classic story of the guy who had no money and became incredibly wealthy and incredibly famous overnight, globally famous overnight. And, you know, you see them start to crash and burn and lose it. Now, the question is always, can somebody pull out of this and get their, you know, get their life back together and make a comeback? And it looks like right now Conor McGregor is on track, and he looks good. All the signs point that, you know, he's healthy mentally, physically, and emotionally. Now the question is, can he win this fight on Saturday?
All right, so how do you see it? You touched on this, Dana, that the Cowboy's not getting enough respect. If it goes to the mat, he's got a good shot. If he can survive that early onslaught from Conor McGregor, how do you see the fight going?
Yeah, the other thing is that Cowboy is really long and lanky, and he lands those knees from everywhere. He can throw when a guy comes in to throw punches on Cowboy, he throws these nasty knees to the body, to the face. Conor has a lot of things that he's going to have to deal with Cowboy Cerrone that he's never dealt with before, because he's never fought a guy that long and rangy with those set of tools.
All right, so final question. The card also has the rematch, Dana, of Holly Holm and Raquel Pennington. Holm is coming off that loss to Amanda Nunes, who, by the way, we had her on the show finally. She's unbelievable. She is great. But
I love that girl, man. She is the GOAT, and she is an amazing human being.
She really is. I want to say, and I don't mean any disrespect by this, because she is one of the toughest human beings I've ever seen, but she has just got such a great way about her. I mean, like, she's charming. She is so interesting. But in terms of the fight on Saturday night, you have Holly Holm trying to come back from that loss to Amanda. What are you expecting to see from Holly on Saturday night?
Yeah, so this is a fun fight because both of these two love to stand and trade. They both have big punches, and their last fight went to a split decision. So obviously a very important fight for both of these girls. You know, Holly Holm, after the win over Ronda, is still very much a big star, and people love to see her fight. So big fight for both these girls.
He is the president of the UFC, UFC 246, McGregor versus Cowboy, Saturday night, live from Las Vegas on pay-per-view. Dana, always good to have you on the show. Have a great weekend, and it's great to have you back.
You too, my friend. I appreciate it.
Did you see the Orlando Magic? Did you see what they did to the LA Lakers at Staples last night? Better question, did you see Aaron Gordon doing what he did to the LA Lakers at Staples last night? Because if you did not see that, you need to see that. If you did see that, it's time to see it again. Roll it.
Vucevic swings it to Gordon. He'll attack. He'll tomahawk. And the foul. Aaron Gordon drops the hammer in Los Angeles.
Throw it down, big man. Damn, that was dirty. If you like that, if you like absurd explosiveness and ridiculous dunks, I've got good news for you. I've got good news, in fact, for the entire league, because the moment we have been waiting for has nearly arrived. The Pelicans announced yesterday that basketball Christmas is officially set for January 22nd. If you've been paying attention, you've seen the shoot around or the practice highlights, your anticipation was probably building. You knew it was coming. It was only a matter of time. And then Pelicans executive VP of basketball operations, David Griffin, told the media yesterday that when is January 22nd. That what is the Zion Williamson NBA regular season debut. And this is real. This is not a drill. I repeat, Zion is going to make his NBA regular season debut at home Wednesday against San Antonio. Hell yeah. Let's go. It is nearly Zion time. Zion Day is less than a week away. So let me really quickly recap the timeline. Zion had surgery on the meniscus in his right knee on October 21st. The initial expectation was he would be ready by Christmas, but the team did not want to rush anything. Then he returned to full practice January 2nd, and then he participated in 5-on-5s January 7th. But since then, because of the game schedule, the team has not had enough time for more practices. Griffin, though, had this to say about the timeline.
This process has been one that's been really, really good. We've learned a lot more than we've probably taught him, frankly. But he's getting to the point where we actually think he's as ready as he believes he is. So everything's moving in the right direction.
So I see what they did. They took their time. They did their work, not just on the knee, but on everything.
You're addressing ankle flexion, and then you're addressing knees and hips and back and everything else. And I think what's happened is his overall kinetic chain is in a much better position now because of this. And it starts with the fact that he's more flexible. And then once you make somebody more flexible, you have to give him the strength to control that flexibility. And that's been a dance. It really has been. But he's now able to do some things physically he wasn't able to do before.
Whoa. You heard what he just said. He's now able to do some things physically that he was not able to do before. Like, based on what we saw at Duke, and even on what we saw in the preseason, it looked like there was pretty much nothing that Zion could not physically do. And now you're telling me that he can do some things physically that he was unable to do before. What couldn't he do before physically? The guy can do everything. Remember this?
He's looking for help, and Williamson comes up with the steal, and there he goes!
I mean, the guy could do that. What could the guy do now that he couldn't do before? Remember when he did this?
Two players converge, Barrett
emerges.
Well, let's see. Who got it? Well, there's no question about that one. Zion got the block.
Zion did get the block and nearly impaled himself on the glass in the process. You remember when he did that? How about, do you remember when he did this?
Top 10, good pass. Oh, yeah. Oh boy. He might have the whole top 10 to himself by the end of the night.
That pass.
I reset these highlights. I hope you're watching on CBS Sports Network. They're amazing. They're amazing. And I reset them because David Griffin just said he can now do some things that he was not able to do before. And I'm saying, what could the guy not do before? You see, because of his absence, I have practically worn out the tape on these clips, reminding myself of what we saw last year. Did that look like a guy who was physically limited? Did that look like a guy who had a couple of things that he was not able to do? Hell no. And he showed it again in Summer League when he absolutely ragdolled New York Knick Kevin Knox.
Blew it inside. Robinson tapped it out to Knox. Zion rips it. Oh, yeah, it's time to get in the gym.
Ragdoll. Time to get in the gym. So the reason I'm setting this up like this is, again, you're telling me that he can do things now that he was unable to do before. Yeah, like what? That doesn't make sense to me. Like, that doesn't really even add up or compute. Yet there's one more detail, according to Griffin.
Yesterday, the work that Zion did was as good as I've seen to this point, better than he was in the preseason. So we feel like he'll be a bigger, better version of himself.
A bigger, better version of Zion. Hey, I didn't know that was possible. If it's true, that's amazing. If that's true, look the hell out. And the crazy thing is, the way the Pelicans have been playing of late, the way the West is shaping up, Zion might not only come back and play, Zion might come back and play and help them in the postseason, help them to the postseason. They're only four games back, and there are a number of teams that they do have to jump, but they could do it. They could. And then you'd be looking at a Zion-LeBron matchup, possibly in the first round. Zion and LeBron in the first round. To quote my old man, Van Smack Sr. back in the day. How's that grab you? How's that grab you? Except, yeah, that's, I say that for something good. He would always say that to me for something bad. Like, how about, hey, you know what? I think you're looking at a one-year grounding. How's that grab you? Yeah, that'd be great, old man. Oh, really? Now you got 2 years. How's that grab you? Not as much as the last one did. Yeah, now you got three. You're grounded for 3 years. How's that grab you? It sucks, Dad. You're grounded till you're 50. How's that grab you? All right, I'm done. Peace out. You win. Anyway, I don't want to get too carried away. I don't want to set the bar too high. But it's hard to stay down at this point. The wait has been long. The wait has been hard. We're now 6 days away from basketball Christmas. And from the sounds of things, it's going to be worth the wait. Let's go. Let's bleep and go. Six more days. A bigger, better, more explosive, more flexible Zion. Brad Underwood is my guest. Brad, good to have you on. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jim. Thanks for having me on. Hope you're well.
Yeah, I'm doing great. And I'm eager to talk to you about your team. Let me first start with the win over Rutgers on Saturday. You beat them 54-51, but it's a game where you didn't shoot the ball maybe as well as you would have liked, but you still found a way to get it done. So, Brad, what's that tell you about the growth of this team, that over the course of this season you can shoot 19% in the first half and still find a way to win?
Yeah, Jim, that was a rock fight. That was just two teams that were very physical. It was a hard-fought game. We've been working really hard in our growth process and building Illinois basketball back. To be able to win a game like that, when you can rely on your defense, when you can rely on rebounding, we can't ever control the ball going in all the time. And it was just a hard-fought game. Rutgers had a tough shooting night as well, and it was literally offensive rebounds and extra possessions And I was proud of our guys because that's what we're ultimately striving for. You have games in the postseason and the NCAA tournament where you don't shoot it well, and you got to find a way to win those games. And our team's still very young, but we're growing in terms of our maturity, and that was a big step forward.
Illinois head coach Brad Underwood is my guest. You mentioned the growth of Illinois and bringing Illinois back. That win on Saturday meant that when the latest AP poll did come out, the program was ranked for the first time in more than 5 years. Now, every coach I talk to, Brad, will tell you it doesn't mean a whole lot right now. They more or less shake off the polls in January. But at the same time, is there a bit of a milestone or a moment of pride that you and the players have in getting the program back to where it's been in the past?
Yeah, and we haven't made a big deal about it, but, you know, Illinois's got such a, you know, they were in the 2005 Final Four. They've got so many great players and such rich history, and it's been on a hiatus from the top 25. So it's a big deal for our fans. There is a standard that we're trying to reach here, and that's part of it. But, you know, I'm like everybody else. In January, it doesn't mean a whole lot other than that people talk about you a little more being in the top 25, but you got to go win your next one. The Big Ten's the best conference in the country this year, and every night's a challenge.
Glad you brought that up. I was going to say, if that win over Rutgers was a rock fight, I could argue that every single game in that conference is a rock fight. In the Big Ten, it's always going to be a battle. Right now, though, there are five Big Ten teams in the top 25 and a bunch more knocking on the door. As evidence, a really good team like Ohio State already has four conference losses. So how tough and how deep is the conference this year?
Yeah, I think we've got 12 teams in the top 38 in the KenPom and 12 in the top 41 of the net, and that's unheard of. And, you know, the thing that makes the Big Ten so special, Jim, is every night, every venue you go to, it's a sellout crowd. You know, it was 19,000 the other night at Wisconsin. Maryland does that. Michigan State, you go right on down the list. And, you know, I think there's been five road wins so far in conference play, or six road wins in conference play so far. So it's really challenging, and great coaches and really good players, and it's a challenge every night.
Illinois back in the top 25. Their head coach, Brad Underwood, is my guest. Brad, you mentioned some of the young players, like freshman Kofi Coburn, of course, comes to mind. 11 points, 17 rebounds, and two blocks now. Went over Rutgers. He came into the season with a lot of hype, you know, the kind of hype coupled with the transition to college basketball. It can be really a lot for some guys, but it doesn't seem to faze him. What do you make of how he's handled everything that's come his way so far?
Kofi's been unbelievable, Jim. I mean, he's a unique kid, not just in his physical stature. He's 7 foot. He's 290 pounds, and he's super athletic. He's the second fastest guy on our team. But the thing that's allowed him is his coachability. He is dying to learn. He's an unbelievable listener. Every single day, he pushes himself, and you know, he's been in a position where he's had some nights where he hasn't been real good, but he's had some nights that he's been outstanding, and those nights that he's not good have been fewer and fewer, and that's learning how to practice hard and learning how to do all those things. But very, very coachable, and that's made his transition that much easier.
So if he's that gifted athletically and he's that coachable and he's that willing to work, how high is his ceiling?
Well, I've said it many times. Right now, he's about ankle deep in his talent pool. His upside is through the roof. You know, he's a guy that can elevate his team and his teammates just because of his presence. And he occupies two bodies when it comes to rebounding. He's so fast, but yet his mental growth is where he can really take himself to the next level. And that's where he's getting better every day. And like I said, he's a sponge. He just wants information. He wants to learn how to become the best player he can be. And, you know, when you've got Shaquille O'Neal-like physical tools, you know, that's exciting and it's really fun to work with.
Brad Underwood's the head coach at Illinois. You mentioned information. In the offseason, you dug into analytics and you looked at a lot of different teams and different aspects of the game, like free throws attempted, rebounds, and more. What was your biggest takeaway from that time looking at other teams and getting that information?
Yeah, we had to change. I think it was one of the things that we dove in and we started looking at Sweet 16 teams, Big Ten teams, and we went back throughout my career and as a head coach. And even though we turned teams over at a very, very high rate, you know, some things weren't translating. Last year was a year, Jim, where we didn't get to the foul line enough, And we've always been a good offensive rebounding team. Last year we were not. And we were 338th in the country in fouls committed. I think right now we're fifth. And that change has been drastic. We're also getting to the foul line more. And we've done some schematic things to change. Kofi's presence has impacted that as well. But we had to make some changes, and we were way behind the national trend of Sweet 16 teams in a lot of areas, and we've worked to rectify that.
We're talking to Brad Underwood. So when you go through a season like that, Brad, and the record is not what you would have liked, the locker room in a situation like that, especially with young athletes, could splinter, but that did not happen. Like, I always talk to coaches about momentum from one season to the next, but how much do the relationships that were built last year translate to the success you're having this year?
Well, we had 8 new guys last year in the second toughest schedule in the country. And we showed our talent at times. You know, we were in Maui. We have a chance at the buzzer to beat Gonzaga. And then we weren't tough enough or prepared enough for the next 2 nights. So we went through those speed bumps and those learning curves. But we got unbelievable character in our locker room. And I'm really big on, especially with young guys, building those relationships so you can coach them, so that they can get better and they can feel buy-in and committed. Illinois is a special place and plays in front of a packed house every night. And Big Ten basketball is I think every kid enjoys that opportunity. So the program itself was gaining momentum. We beat Michigan State late. We went on the road and beat Maryland. We beat Ohio State. So, you know, our kids hung in there and kept fighting, and that carried over through the spring. We went on a trip to Italy this summer. That continued with the new guys, and it's just kind of manifested itself into a great locker room right now.
And then finally, the key phrase there, buy-in, and you do have to establish those relationships in order to get that buy-in. Hey, Brett, how do you establish those kind of relationships? How do you connect with young athletes today to make sure that they do buy in?
Yeah, it's a lot of one-on-one time. I think every kid is different. We have a lot of international kids that actually grow up different than we do here in the States. And it's getting to know those kids on a one-on-one basis. It's understanding that you love them. We tell them that. But we also challenge them. And I think everybody wants discipline. I think, you know, if a young guy misses a class or is late for something, there's repercussions for that. So we hold them accountable. And I think that as soon as you do that, they know that you care about them. And we work really hard at building those relationships. I don't want any young guy to leave my practice and dread coming back the next day. So we're going to have those lines of communication to solve those problems. And that's how it works. We use the term family a lot, which a lot of people do, but we take it literally. That's an important piece for us.
Illinois coming off a tough win over Rutgers. They're now 12-5. They're number 24 in the AP poll, and they're at home Saturday against Northwestern. Their head coach, Brad Underwood, is in his third season. Brad, great to have you back on the show. Thanks so much.
I appreciate you having me, Jim. Love the show.
Dear Jimmy, gonna bump some jazz music while I take you to school. How's that grab you? Regards, old man Rome. See, now that's a way that he would use that. How's that grab you? Man, it sucks. Your music sucks. It doesn't grab me at all. And when I talk about jazz, I'm talking about old school jazz. My old man grew up in Boston. He's a Boston guy, my old man. Went to Brookline High School, went to Boston University. Love jazz. Like the old man would talk about how he lived in Cuba for a couple of years and worked in his factory and would go to the jazz clubs. He'd regale me with all these stories I hated. Yeah, let me tell you about the time I went to the... Yeah, I've heard that story, Dad. Yeah, I know that story. About time you're in Havana and you went to this jazz club. Did the music suck as much inside of that club as it does inside this car? Ah, tough guy. All right. What do you say we take another drive around the block and listen to it? I can't even begin to tell you. How's that grab you? I cannot tell you how many times he said to me, when you get your own car, you can listen to your own music. Get in the back of the car. We're going to bump jazz and go to antique stores. Awesome. Sounds like another great Saturday. Oh yeah, really? How's that grab you? Because when we come back, you're going to shovel some horse crap. Because we own horses and you don't. True story. And we're going to fix some fences. Hey, Dad. Respectfully, you and me, we're not good at fixing crap, all right? So why are we fixing these fences? Why are you dragging ass and dragging me to the lumber store again to buy things to fix ourselves? We're not good at that. Oh, yeah, I'm good at it, and you're going to get good at it. And you just sit back there and you listen to my jazz, and we're going to fix some fences. Hey, man, why do you think I had such a chip on my shoulder? It's because of that childhood. A childhood that I spent shoveling horse crap when I didn't ride, listening to jazz, which I hated, and fixing fences, which I was not good at. All true stories of my childhood in Los Angeles. Isn't that weird? All true. We had horses. We fixed fences. We shoveled horse crap, and we listened to jazz. That's the Jim Rome childhood. That's all you need to know about me. That's why I'm sitting in this chair right now. Because I promised myself I'd bust my ass 18 hours a day, if not 20, to get away from that life. The mean streets of Calabasas. Dude, don't send me tweets like that. That's taking me back to a bad place. Oh, man, he thought it was funny, too. My old man, Jay. Man, he thought that was funny. He couldn't enjoy that anymore. And I'll be very clear about this. Not smooth jazz. The jazz you get nice to. None of that. Not easy listening jazz. Yeah, that. I'd be cool with that if we had to listen to that in the back of the car. Nah. I'm talking about that old school jazz. Miles Davis, little Coltrane. Maybe some Thelonious Monk. Old man would just be bopping his head, you know. Not at all embarrassed by it. Just loving how much I hated it. Wait till you get your own car, son. Which reminds me of a time that I broke his transmission on his car. That didn't go well either. All right, so with all of this, you know, and every once in a while when it's come up, when I've talked to somebody about cancer, and not to bring anybody down, and I won't, I just want to say I don't want to make it sound like I'm disrespecting my father who passed away way, way, way back in the day. I was in my late 20s. This is somebody who had leukemia. This is somebody who had cancer. This is somebody who didn't tell anybody he had cancer. Like, the craziest thing of all. You think it was crazy that he made me sit in the back seat and go antiquing with him and fix fences and shovel horse crap? This is somebody who was diagnosed with leukemia and didn't tell anybody except me and my sister and my mom. And went to work every single day and didn't tell anybody. And got treatment and didn't tell anybody. I mean, crazy stuff like that. Old school tough. Old school hard like that. So much respect, Jay. But man, I hated your music. And antiquing too. Why are we doing that? Man, I hated that. You know how many antique stores there are in the San Fernando Valley? Millions. Millions. On every freaking corner. Going through somebody else's crap. Man, thank goodness he was not a garage sale guy. He dragged me off to that. Hey, what would you rather be doing? Watching football? Yes. Yes. What's that like when you're growing up? I can't believe the fights that I would have with him. I digress so much. I'm sorry. I can't believe the battles I would have with him to watch games, to watch football, to watch college football, to watch the NBA, to watch baseball. You know, good, the right stuff. Now, the fights I have now with my kid about get the hell off that PS4. Man, get off that game. Get off that game. My old man would be like, wait, you're watching a football game? Get your ass outside. Get outside. And I would. And I would. And by the way, I'd always fear him coming in the house because I knew he was coming and I knew what was coming. And the other thing was, I feared the old man. I respected him and I was afraid of him. That's why I turned out to be such a gem, because I was kind of afraid of my old man. Not that he ever lifted a hand or anything. He didn't need to. Now, my kid looks at me like, yeah, what? Yeah, I know I got 30 minutes a day on this thing, and I'm going on hour six. What? I've done my homework.
Good night!